28 Ways to Save the World with Megan Scully. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to 28 Ways to Save the World on News Talk, your practical guide to greener living and the simple steps we can all take to tackle climate change. My name is Megan Scully, and this episode is all about curating a more conscious closet and how sustainability never goes out of style. From reusing your clothes and reimagining your wardrobe, we'll show you how saving the planet is always in season. Stay tuned while we trace where our old clothes end up and unravel the true price of fast fashion, because looking good shouldn't cost the earth. Now, when we talk about sustainable fashion, charity shops are real style heroes. You may have browsed their rails, found a hidden gem, or just dropped off a donation bag or two. With its network of shops and decades of service, few organisations have been as essential to the circular economy as Oxfam. They provide affordable goods, give pre-loved clothes a second life, all while reducing textile waste and supporting global causes. Joining us now in studio is Donated Goods Strategy Manager at Oxfam Ireland, Mark Sweeney. Mark, you're very welcome to the show. Can we talk about the circular economy and what we mean by it when we talk about charity shops?
I think the charity shop in Ireland has always been there as part of the community, and it's been a circular economy long before the actual concept of circular economy even existed. And I think we're very lucky in Ireland to have that. I mean, across the island of Ireland, we have over 700 charity shops. So it's every town, every village. And what they have done, what they do still, is they provide affordable clothing for people who need it, but they also raise valuable funds for the charity that they support. But they keep things in use longer as well, not just clothes, household items, books, accessories, everything in between. So it is about extending the life of things.
And what about the misconceptions around charity shops? Like, I'm sure, like, there is, I feel like with the power of social media, there's been a real shift in people's attitudes towards it, that like it's almost like trendy now.
Definitely post-COVID, it became more of a thing. And I think people realized, you know, sitting at home, locked inside, the amount of stuff they've had, but also their relationship. And I always kind of equate that. It's the relationship people have with things. And I think going into a charity shop now and finding something that's more individual, something that's not available, the no trend, if you will, is become more popular. People trying to be more individual and you know, dress for who they are rather than what trend is pushed in front of them by marketing.
How do you decide when it comes to the whole sorting of items and what shops they go into? Because I understand a lot of people love donating and it's such a good thing to do, but sometimes some stuff isn't usable.
Yeah, I mean, we say it's wearable or non-wearable.
Okay.
So if it's wearable, we will try and sell it. And I mean, that's always that process. So, I mean, for Oxfam, most of our product is sorted in the store that it's donated to.
Okay.
So if you donate into the Ring's End store, you donate into, you know, the Tullamore store or wherever, those items are sorted within that store and we try and sell them. If they don't sell on that, then we don't give up on that item. We cascade it or pass it through the chain. So something that might have not sold in Georgia Street might move on to Mullingar. So it might be given another chance. Because if something is good enough to wear, we believe we should give people the opportunity. And because we're retail, we do have to change our stock quite regularly to make sure that people who come in and shop see something different. But that's why we always want to pass it down.
Yeah, because I suppose there'll be a buyer for every item. And when it comes to Oxfam and I suppose helping reduce fashion waste, like, what is the role that you play?
We're really heavily involved in behavioural change now. We're really trying to work at a different level. We're more than just a charity shop, and that's kind of what we see ourselves as. We have taken part in, you know, policy stuff with the government in terms of the Waste Framework Directive for textiles, which is how textiles are disposed of when people are finished with them, so post-consumer textiles. We're part of the Extended Producer Responsibility Program that's going to be launched for textiles as well. So we're trying to, I suppose, offer advice on that along with other charities as well. Because we do charity retail, and Oxfam Ireland play a huge part of what will happen to clothes when people are finished with them, we've tried to introduce new schemes to get people to donate when they haven't donated before. So we have Postback now, which allows people to be able to donate from home free of charge through post. Okay. So you never have to leave the house to be able to donate. And what we found from our research is that the best entry point for anybody to get into the circular economy is by giving up the stuff that they have. And then they'll understand that what they've given up is what's available in those shops, those charity shops, those secondhand shops. It's the same things.
Well, something you said there now, which I found fascinating, was the fact that you can now donate from home, because I do think there are people who possibly don't have cars.
Mm-hmm.
Again, living in urban areas, it's really hard to be carting a big, massive bag full of clothes. That is such a great idea, and it's something I actually didn't even know about. So it's that's really good, because I think it does allow people to possibly donate their clothes properly.
That's exactly the consideration we had when we came up with the idea. Was we knew the barriers that people had. So it was that they live in apartment blocks and they don't have a car and they can't get to a charity shop, or that they live rurally and they can't, you know, or you just don't have time. And I think that's the biggest thing we're all lacking now, which amazes me, but we are all lacking time. So we work with Unpost, and it's reverse logistics as well. So Unpost's van is going out there every day of the week, and we use that to bring our donations back through the system as well.
I want to touch a bit on the government there as well, and kind of what you said, because it actually kind of goes into one of the questions I was going to ask you about the local community and kind of working together. But like, can the government do more, and what should they also be doing, or what can, you know, can we put maybe pressure on our local electives to kind of say, look, we want to see more changes?
You've mentioned community, and Oxfam very much see ourselves as part of every community that we're in, as does every charity shop. Most of our shops are, you know, depend on volunteers that come from the community. So being able to make that connection that, you know, the government need to do more to kind of support charities, especially to deal with the increase in volume of donations that can come in now because of fast fashion, because of all these different things, you know, I think that's where I can see a real shift, is if the government can incentivize maybe work schemes to come into, you know, charity retail, learn retail skills, because that's one thing that we've done really well, is try and, you know, we have young people who come in, we have, you know, interns who come in from different countries, we have people who have lost their job that come in and volunteer, and they learn a new skill with us, they learn how to, you know, merchandise, they learn how to use a till, they learn how to interact with customers, they learn all those behaviours and those skills in the charity shop, and then they can go off. And we've had great success of people going off finding employment after volunteering with us. But really, I think if the government helped support that more, and, you know, give, you know, additional incentives to people who came in and did scheme placements in charity shops, I think that'd be really helpful for communities.
So you go into any charity shop, you end up staying for a lot longer because you end up chatting.
They're there because they want to do something good. They're not there to sell you a piece of clothes. And I think that's the difference. If you go into high street retailers, it's about making the sale.
Mm-hmm.
Where with us, it's about, you know, we want to tell you that top would look good on you, or you want, and genuinely mean it, because it won't be coming from a place of trying to sell it to you, because that's not what we do. It is about just engaging with people, having a conversation. And you're right. I think anyone that walks into a charity shop and is willing to just be open, we'll have a conversation, you know.
Now, speaking of course, selling items, money has been raised. So tell us about some of the money raised in Oxfam and where it goes.
Well, I mean, we work across such a massive amount of areas, but obviously one of the main things for us is, you know, crises, disasters, wars. But also, I mean, what we have seen in more recent times is the way that the work that we do in our shops in terms of circular economy and climate action has now lined up with a lot of the work that we do from program point of view as well. And the people who suffer those effects of, you know, disasters, a lot of those disasters are caused by the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has come full circle for us, pardon the pun, but it really has come around to a stage where our work now is trying to combat the effects of what climate crisis has done. There's injustices in the world, and obviously that's where we aim as well. And obviously Palestine, Gaza, that's like a huge area for us to work in at the moment, but we do a lot of, I suppose, I've always seen, and this is my own words, it's not an Oxfam expression, but I don't see Oxfam as ever just putting, you know, a band-aid on something. We're trying to find, you know, what's the root cause of what's causing this problem and put a solution in place. And that's what our funding goes to do. We also do a lot of work here at home in Ireland in terms of, you know, policy and advocacy against tax evasion and that kind of thing, where, you know, we're really trying to hold people accountable for their actions as well.
Where do you see maybe the future of charity shops?
I'd love to see more charity shops in areas where the people are, so shopping centres. There's always been a barrier out there to shopping centres letting them in because they feel that they're dirty, dusty shops. But if you look, your experience, you know, you walk into a charity shop, you wouldn't know it was a charity shop now. And I think that's the shift in terms of, you know, the way they're presented, the way they, you know, the shoppers interact with them. They are clothes shops, they are fashion shops. And I'd love to see more of that on, you know, those areas where consumers are, because I think people would come in and try it if it was in an area that was accessible to them. And I think that's where the growth is just letting people come and try it and give it a chance.
What about online shopping? Because I see the volume of clothes that come into charity shops, and obviously there's a lot of unique items and one-off items. So is online shopping really possible, because there is so much out there?
I think that's ever how charity retail will go. I think it's more to try and influence people to come and try it, because the one-off nature of what we have, it's a physical experience. You have to come in and, you know, and shopping for clothes should be a physical experience. It's tactile. You have to touch a piece of clothes to see how it feels, and you have to experience that. And I think that has got lost in online shopping now. People just buy it because they've been told to buy it. Like, we've seen it from our experiences, people buy three sizes. They buy the sizes they think will fit them. They buy the sizes too small or the sizes too big, because they know, they expect that when the item comes, that it's not going to fit them. And I think that's a real, that speaks to why we should slow down on buying things online, why we should get back out there and, you know, make it an experience. And to go back to your earlier point about young people shopping in charity shops now, that's where the shift has. It's become a community experience. It's become a thing that they do with their friends.
I just love the experience of going in physically, and actually touching clothes is like one of my favourite things. But finally, before I let you go, can you give us maybe one tip for our listeners right now, do you think? Just something to walk away with.
The one thing that I like to say is about taking better care of your clothes, because that helps in so many ways. It means you get more joy out of it. It means that the person that you pass it on to will get more joy out of it, because it's been better taken better care of. But I would say also, try a charity shop. Just pop in, give it a go. I guarantee you will find something that you like.
Mark Gurmila Milamagut.
Thank you very much.
Charity shops are a great example of slow fashion in operation, giving new life to old clothes. But as an alternative to physical stores and a more on-demand way to sell your cast-offs, digital platforms are increasing in popularity. Vinted is one such site, tailor-made for eco-style. Joining me to discuss how to get the most out of the app and experience is fashionista and self-style Vinted addict, Kim Buckley. Kim, you're very welcome to the show. How did you get into Vinted?
I started in Depop because I was absolutely broke, and I had a few bits and bobs, some with tags on, some that were just really good. So I put them up on Depop, and you know, not even thinking that I might end up buying stuff. But I started selling, and I don't know if you remember Sale of Works back in the day. I used to help my granddad when I was a kid, and the thrill of making a sale.
Yeah.
So I got that same buzz again. I was like, oh my God, I've just sold something. So I started really getting into it, just, you know, happily going to the post office. I know that puts some people off kind of having to go and pack it up, but I'm just like, oh, I'm off to do my messages. So I head to the post office, and so I just got a real thrill. Then, obviously, as I was on the app more, I started seeing things. I'm like, oh, that's quite nice. And as I said, I was broke. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll start shopping here as well. So then it just snowballed, and I just got completely addicted. And then obviously when Vinted launched last November, it was, you know, game over for me, basically, because it was the Irish market, but it also opened up to the French market. So that it's still the same now that we can buy from France and Ireland. But the French Vinted had obviously been established for much longer. So the clothes on there, like the vintage stuff, is just phenomenal. Like, if you're into like vintage Adidas, you know, they've lovely vintage leather clothes. And then even kids' clothes. And then obviously Cezanne, which everyone is obsessed with.
Yes.
So you could get like a, you know, and things that are worn once, twice, things with tags on for half the price.
Can I actually ask now, what is your favourite item you've bought online? Because I have some stuff from charity shops that I will never let go of, because I'm like, it's like special to me, even though it, you know, probably didn't cost that much. But what is that one like item you'd look at and go, yeah?
I bought a pair of Ganni trousers that were tags on in my size. They're pink cord baggy trousers, and I got them for €40.
Lovely.
I think I jumped for joy when they arrived, because I was like, maybe they're fake, maybe they're not real, but they were. They arrived and they're stunning. I have a lovely my number one holy grail item was a vintage Adidas regatta jumper from the Olympics in the 1980s.
It's multicolored,
really baggy. Now, it had a few stains on it, but here's another sustainable tip is this natural bleach I found on kind of an eco-cleaning website, so you can put any clothes in and it won't damage them. So I just soaked it in this natural bleach and it came out like new.
There you go. There's another tip for us. When you said you started it because you were trying to make some money, and now it sounds like it's more of like, is it more of a hobby or is it actually more of a side hustle now?
No, it's not a side hustle because I'm not making any money because I'm spending more than I'm. But I just kind of went off Instagram because it's just a bit depressing at the moment. So my advice when you're starting out is to start engaging with the algorithm. So people go on and they download Vinted and they just expect to see things that they like, but that's not going to happen until you start engaging. So if you have brands that you love, like I love Levi's jeans, they fit me really well. So if you start searching brands like Adidas, Levi's, Ganni, Cezanne, Rixo, if you see something you like, hit the like button, even if it's not in your size. And then the algorithm will start listening to you and it will start sending you things that it thinks, you know, you might like because you've started liking these things. Then you can start making offers, and this is where it gets exciting. So it gives me more joy to find a bargain and to find something that suits me so well than just going into a high street shop and finding something that everyone has. And then I'm making an offer. So say it's up for 50 euro, I'll be like, I'll give it to you for 40, or can I have it for 45? And they might say no, or they might say yes. And the thrill that gives me, I'm sitting on the couch watching telly and it's just so exciting. I'm like, yeah. And then it arrives in the post. It's a whole ritual that's really, it's just, I love it. I've always loved secondhand clothes.
Yeah.
I used to get a bag of clothes from my cousins and it would be better for me than my man bringing me into a shop.
Talking about the kind of in terms of sustainability and I guess the whole issue around fast fashion, is Vinted the answer to it?
I think Vinted is part of the puzzle. And Depop and charity shops and stuff. But obviously, it's down to the brands. You know, the demand has to stop. The fast fashion industry is just out of control. And I think it's one of the worst contributors to the carbon footprint. And it's one of the four biggest industries damaging our planet. And I think if people start making more mindful choices, I mean, obviously, like I shop in pennies and people do shop in pennies. And I have things that I've had that have lasted me years. Just don't wear it once and throw it away. That's where the problem is. Look after it, wash it well. For me as well, I have two small kids and you can't justify buying them expensive clothes because they're going to destroy it. They're going into crash. There's paint all over it. I've been buying things on Vinted for them, which I never thought I would. But actually, when you're buying them cheap clothes, they do fall apart and they don't last, even though they're only in them for a few months because they're growing so fast. Yeah. I just bought my son a coat that was worn once for 20 euro on Next, but it would have been, you know, 50, 60 euro in the shop. And you can't justify buying a 4-year-old a 60 euro coat. But you need good quality clothes for kids. So it's hard to kind of balance that. But I think that's kind of a good way to offset buying a load of cheap stuff for kids. And you kind of have to buy the cheap stuff because they're gone in a year. Do you know what I mean? So getting hand-me-downs from other mams as well, that's also a really good way of avoiding that.
Would a tax work or do people care? Because I think I've noticed with the likes of Shein and what's the other one, Temu, that comes up. Like actually, what I've done is I've blocked all of them and muted them all from my accounts because I didn't want to be seeing them.
You need to put the onus on the companies. You can't put the guilt on the people, on the consumers.
Yeah, that's exactly. Now, I feel like your shopping habits have probably changed so much because the likes of Vinted and Depop.
Yeah.
What about your family and friends? Have they all now kind of jumped on board?
No.
Oh.
My sisters have, yes, because I'm sending them things that they might like and they're really into it. But my mom, how much I'm spending on, you know, and putting time into and being mindful about my practices, my mom is still buying stuff on Temu for my kids. And I'm like, mom, I'm sending her articles, but you know, moms, I think she is becoming more mindful because the last time I was like, no, I've had enough of this now, stop. But my dad would be a real sort of buy once, buy well. And, you know, but I think men shop differently than women.
Their clothing,
I mean,
as well. I get a lot of my clothes from the men's section of charity shops.
Yes.
And most of my blazers are 100% wool. My shirts are 100% cotton because men's clothes, for some reason, seem to be made of the best materials.
And I think it's trickled down, like, things that were made years ago are made better because people were buying once and buying well. there's another thing about, you know, oh, this viral trench coat. Why do you want to wear a trench coat that everybody on the street is wearing? You know, I would rather go and search for an old Burberry vintage trench that is probably cheaper and will fit you better, will be made better, will last forever. You can pass it down, you can sell it on. And the other thing that puts people off into it is, oh, what if it doesn't fit? And I'm worried about, you know, not being able to, what will I do with it then? I can't return it. But I always say, if you want to buy it, someone else will want to buy it. It might take a few months, it might take a year. So be mindful that you mightn't be able to return, you know, get your money back immediately. But if you wanted it, someone else will want it. So just be patient, because things that have arrived for me that don't fit me have sold on, but they mightn't have sold on immediately. Do you know, I've had something up for 2 years and someone bought it recently. Do you know what I mean? So it will sell on, but you just have to be patient.
I was just going to say, patience is key. So what would be your top tips for me starting out brand new on Vinted and selling maybe some of my items?
Yeah, okay. So I'll start with buying and then I'll go on to selling. So you start with your preferences. So you put in your shoe size, your, you know, whether you're a small, medium or large, and then you can get into 10, 12, 14, 16. Also, plus size clothes are fantastic there. You know, people who are plus size find it hard to buy clothes on the high street for them, but they will find some absolute gems. So you put in your preferences and then you search your brands. You start engaging with the algorithm, liking, start making a few offers. You don't have to commit. But once you're engaging with the brand, it will start recognizing what you like and feeding it back to you.
Okay.
And then for selling, there's loads of tips on the app, but on Depop, you can kind of use the shop bought image. Okay. You're not allowed on Vinted, so it has to be the actual real item in your house. So try and get the creases out of it, make it look as good as possible, because there's nothing worse than going, oh, that looks nice, and it's the image from the website, and then you scroll and it's just like a wrinkled piece of, you know, can't even tell what it is. Put it up on a hanger, put it up on the door, or a nice background or a plain background, or even sometimes if you have a nice bedspread, light across the bedspread. Take as many photos as possible, the more the better, far away, close up. Take a picture of the label, the care label. If it's a designer brand, take a picture of the receipt, the serial number, and the tag and the materials, the washing instructions. And just the more the better. You can do videos as well. And then put in a good description. You know, obviously, there's an AI tool that you can use to, they'll take the photos and write a description. You can use that, or you can make up your own. Like, I loved this coat. It's amazing. It was my favorite, but it just doesn't suit me anymore. I'm not reaching for it. You know, you could be a bit more personal. And then, and be patient.
One thing though, just before I go. So let's say I have like, well, this shirt I've got in mind that I don't really wear, but what if I was to wear it, maybe going somewhere and then have a picture of me in it? Do people like that?
Yeah,
they're like, oh,
that.
She actually did
wear it.
You want
to see it on, because if you say what size you are and you say, I'm a size 14, this is it on me. I'm a size 10, this is it on a size 10.
Okay.
And especially if it's an oversized vintage item, you know, you could say this is it on a 10, and they can kind of get an idea.
Kim, I can't wait to see how I actually progress in on Vinted, but thank you so much for joining us today. But before I let you go, we are, of course, 28 Ways to Save the World. What would be that one tip you have for listeners right now?
I know people are saying, why am I washing out my yogurt pot when Jeff Bezos is getting 50 private jets into the airport? That's not your problem. Your problem is your day to day. So try and be as sustainable as you can in your day to day. You know, use less water, take the bus, cycle, drive the car less, maybe change your electricity bill, and be conscious of when you're cooking the dinner, and don't get overwhelmed by it, because it's up to the government and it's up to the big industries to make that big impact. So vote for people that you think might make a change that aligns with your values, and just, you know, tiny steps, tiny efforts, they do make a difference.
Kim Buckley, Grimila Magath, August Das Kossalath.
How false your oath.
So what my mother does is she goes to charity shops and then she just buys me stuff from charity shops. But then our house is full of charity shop because we just... And I'm like, ma'am, just because it's a label doesn't mean I need to have it.
I know.
Yeah, but like it's...
You can't be talking to mams. I'm like, ma'am, listen to me. And she's just like, ma'am, ma'am, ma'am. And she'll just do her thing.
My mother is like blind as the bat. But by God, when she's in the charity shop, she's like, I found this and it's like designer. And I'm going, how did you see that? So we've just heard how platforms like Vinted are making it easier than ever to shop sustainably from your own closet. But when you have to buy something new, ethical clothing stores are where fashion meets conscience. Here, garments are designed to last longer, impact less, and help us build a wardrobe that's timeless and not disposable. A fitting place for me to find such a store is in an area of great natural beauty. So I've just arrived out to Clifton in Connemara, and it's a lovely day out here, a lovely Connemara day, and I'm just heading into Oh By Gum, which is a store here that is B Corp, meaning it is sustainable and has over 80 brands, which are also B Corp. They've got everything from women's, men's, children, they've got well-being, they've got so many different products, deodorants, underwear, you name it, it's all in here under one roof. Sharon Griffin, this is an incredible place you've got here, and it's so nice to meet you. But can you tell me, how did Oh By Gum come about?
As you can tell by my accent, I'm not from Connemara originally. I've been living here, though, for the last 30 years. Probably 20 years ago, I started to work for a beautiful family-run, small, independent chain of boutiques here in Connemara. And it was actually Ali Hewson, Bono's wife, that first introduced me through her work, not personally, but through her work and the publicity around what she was doing, all about organic cotton and farming. So I started to read up and do more research. It was 2009 at this stage, and it was the recession, and I thought, I want to do retail, but I want it to mean more than just the bottom line. It has to benefit people, it has to benefit the planet as well. So I started Oh By Gum, and my maiden name was Gumley. And I used to make clothes for myself and my friends at school when I was at national school and second level, and I had a little label that said By Gum. So when I decided to open my shop, that's the first name that came to my mind, and 16 years later, it's still there.
What I've noticed around here is some incredible brands, but then we also had the explosion of the internet and online shopping, and then suddenly we see the, I guess, the fast track of fast fashion, which obviously has been and is actively destroying our planet. How is it trying to compete then with the likes of fast fashion?
You don't compete with fast fashion. It's completely different. We need a choice. Local people here in Connemara, we are surrounded by beauty. Why wouldn't we have retail that's as beautiful? Why wouldn't people want to buy clothes that not only make them feel good physically, but also make them feel good within themselves, their well-being and their health? So it's a no-brainer, really. So no, we don't compete with fast fashion. That's negative. We focus on the positive sides. And there's so much more awareness now in the last 16 years. Before, when I first started selling in Oh By Gum, I would just vaguely touch on the benefits of organic cotton. But then our customers started to return, because not only did the clothes feel so much better, but they lasted much longer. And people who bought our children's clothes were coming in because one dress would go through five families. Yeah. I have students who work with me, and what they're learning at school and at university, they're bringing back and educating us. So it's going full circle, because a lot of the students actually were the babies that I was clothing. Wow. 16 years ago.
But I have gone into high street stores and I've seen something that might say it's wool or it's tweed, and then I give a little rub and I was like, there's no more, there's only a small percentage of wool or tweed actually in that. So can you maybe educate us on some of the other materials that are used in sustainable clothing?
If you're looking to buy something wool, of course look through the care label. Mm. And it will break down exactly what materials are used in that. Sometimes we have wool blends, because if you have like full 100% wool, sometimes people don't like it because it might itch, so you might have it blended with another natural material, or you may have a certain amount of recycled fibers. Mm-hmm. In it too. So that's a sustainable way of purchasing woolen items that don't cost a lot financially, but make sure that the second element is recycled if they have to. And of course, when you're looking for items like wool, make sure that it's ethically produced, and look out for certifications and certification numbers too on labels.
I think for a lot of people it's just knowing that you can do that, because I think maybe sometimes we forget that we can actually just open up and look at the label and see where exactly it's coming from. But do tell me about like the consumers, and how are they, I feel like, yeah, as you mentioned, mentioned there, you've probably a lot of the same people returning because they understand quality. And I think that's a message trying to get across to people, is quality over quantity. So how do you find maybe new consumers are wising up to maybe the idea of sustainable clothing?
Younger consumers are learning about sustainability at school, and of course there's so much more awareness on pre-loved clothing too. And we have platforms out there now that you can buy pre-loved clothing much easier, and the stigma that was attached to secondhand clothing has gone now, which is fantastic. We have our own section called Rewear, which we for the last 3 years have been taking our customers' clothes back and reselling them, and then our customers would get a certain percentage back as in store credit. And some people don't want their store credit but have donated their commission, and we've been fundraising for local charities the last few years. But it's very time consuming. So we are now working and plan to work with Galway County Council and Forum to try and build and develop something a lot more sustainable for textile recycling here in Connemara in the next few years.
I think there's also sometimes an idea that sustainable clothes aren't stylish, which all they need to do is come in this door, because I'm telling you, I have spotted so many things here already.
I think if there is that perception, that's just being fed to us through marketing, and marketing from the big brands that want to make you feel slightly insecure so that you will go to their brand and they will look after you. If you wear their brand, you're going to look amazing and just like these models on their marketing campaigns. We all know deep down that's not right. And style is about what's within yourself, how you feel. And everybody feels different from day to day. So it's kind of, when it comes to style, it's defining your own style from each season to each day, and having some really good core basics in your wardrobe that you can work with.
What advice would you have for our listeners who maybe want to shop more consciously?
Do you need something, first of all? First of all, do you need to consume any more? Do you need to consume something that's brand new, or can you source that pre-loved or secondhand? Then, of course, we all need new things, but make sure those new things are non-toxic, that they're not going to harm you or the environment or the people that you're giving these things to, and that they're going to last you.
Cost per wear as well is always something I try to consider. I'm like, okay, if I do buy this, how many times will I wear it? One thing I actually wanted to touch on before I finish up here is the whole idea of greenwashing. I think it's a word that I suppose is thrown out a lot, especially because of social media. So can you explain maybe possibly what greenwashing is and how to look out for it?
If it wasn't for greenwashing, we wouldn't be so complacent about sustainability. Greenwashing keeps us on our toes and ensures that we look a little bit more in the for the small print. But also, no one is perfect and life isn't perfect, and there are some big brands who are in the process of changing the way that they've done business. And so I'm always very cautious in making claims against different brands or different companies with regards greenwashing, because they are in the process. A lot of them could be in the process of change too. So we need to kind of be more open-minded and listen. And of course, yes, if a brand is promising one thing, but then a year later they haven't come up with those goods, then of course, you know, you have every right to think that they're greenwashing. But yes, it's a slow process. But for instance, a couple of my brands that I started with 16 years ago had maybe two or three items in the collection per season that were sustainably made. Now, all of their collection is sustainably made.
28 Ways to Save the World is the name of the show. If you were to give one tip right now to our listeners, what would it be?
I would think very carefully when you are spending your money. How are you going to spend it? Who are you spending it with? Make sure that no one is going to be exposed to harm from your investment.
Sharon Griffin of Oh By Gum here in Clifton in Connemara. Gurmila Magath, it's been so nice to chat to you and be in your store. And I'm actually going to go for a little browse around now myself. And it's just been wonderful. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Megan. It's lovely to have News Talk here. We feel very honoured and privileged to have you here today. Thank you so much.
We've just explored how eco-clothing stores are helping us to shop smarter and more consciously. But even with these options, the reality is that the fashion industry still churns out mountains of discarded clothes every year. A problem that stretches far beyond any single closet. From fast fashion overproduction to items that barely get worn before being tossed, these textile mountains show just how urgent it is to examine where our clothes actually go. Because while we might think that our cast-offs are getting a second life, the truth can be far more complex and dangerous to the planet. Joining us now is Venetia Lamana, a fair fashion campaigner who challenges fashion brands and calls out unethical practices. So Venetia, why is fair fashion so important in today's clothing industry?
I think it's so important because it's one of the most polluting industries in the world. Some data suggests that it's more polluting than aviation and shipping combined.
Wow.
And it employs so many people. We all wear clothes. We're all connected by the threads that make up our clothes. It's a vast industry and something that I think we should all care about because it connects us all.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about fast fashion and, you know, you are such a good educator on everything around fast fashion and fair fashion and sustainable fashion. But like, what are the biggest ethical and environmental issues that maybe go unseen?
There are two major ones for me that I try and focus on. The first one is garment makers. 80% of the people who make our clothes are marginalized and racialized women who are not earning a fair living wage. And the second one is the people who are at the other end of the supply chain, the people who are attempting to cope and manage big fashion's oversupply. So we don't actually currently know how many items of clothing are produced annually. Data suggests that it's between 80 and 150 billion items of clothing every single year, the majority of which is made from polyester, which is derived from petrochemicals and fossil fuels. So the impact is not, you know, not only harmful for the planet, but it's also extremely harmful for people. I work with an organization in Ghana called the Or Foundation, who support the largest secondhand community in the world, an incredible place called Kantamanto in Accra, which is the capital of Ghana. And they receive 15 million used items from countries like the UK, Germany and the USA every single week. And the population in Accra is 5 million alone. So just the scale of used clothes that they're receiving every single week is absolutely vast. And they do such incredible things to reuse all of those items. But unfortunately, because of the deteriorating quality of our clothes and because of how much we're producing, 40% of these items still leave the market as waste. And you've probably seen the images of these clothes washed up on their beaches. So it's a huge, huge issue, and one that not only affects our planet, our precious ecosystems, our biodiversity, but also people.
It's absolutely staggering to hear those numbers out loud. And you did mention the place in Ghana there, but also I've seen, you know, the visuals of the Atamaca in Chile, Dandora in Nairobi. Like, these are just some of the fashion waste mountains of clothes. And it's actually harrowing to see what we, the consumer, have caused.
The one you mentioned, the Atacama Desert in Chile, you know, that landfill is so vast now that it can be seen from space. So it's a huge issue. I mean, I personally do think, obviously, as citizens, we are implicated. You know, we have free will and we are choosing what we buy and we're choosing the brands that we support. That is a choice that we make when we shop. However, I do believe that the real onus here needs to be put on big fashion. When I talk about big fashion instead of fast fashion, I'm referring to all multinational corporations, all huge brands that we're familiar with, not just fast fashion brands, but also sportswear brands and luxury brands. And the reason why I really try and put the emphasis on them is because they are factoring in oversupply, which is overproduction, into their business model, which locks us into a system of overconsuming. And the reason why they're able to market us all of these clothes all of the time, you know, think about the moment you woke up this morning to when you maybe got to work, how many adverts you might have seen in their time, in that time. The reason why they're able to do that is because they aren't paying the people who make their clothes a proper living wage. So they have all of this excess money to spend on marketing. And there's something very sinister to me about that, especially when they know the implications of their excess oversupply. And that's why across all of my social media platforms and in the campaigning that I do, I'm really trying to hold brands to account because I feel that they hold the responsibility.
You do have to wonder if everyone saw where their clothes came from, would they actually buy from that brand? And just to talk a bit more about fair fashion, because you are a fair fashion campaigner. So what does a fair fashion supply chain look like in practice?
I think what's great about kind of envisioning about, you know, what that would look like and also the solutions that are available to us is that so many of these things are already in existence. There are already some really brilliant small brands that prioritize worker well-being and are also very transparent about every part of their supply chain. A lot of it would be, to me, local manufacturing. Obviously, it's much more expensive than we're used to because due to the kind of colonial trade routes that persist today, we've outsourced most of our production. But I think local manufacturing is something that some brands are still doing really brilliantly, you know, honoring the heritage of craft. I think that's one thing. I think being transparent about how much you produce and not overproducing is obviously super important. Paying the people who make your clothes a living wage, but also working to close the pay gap between, you know, the CEO of the brand and the lowest paid garment worker, I think is super important. And just honouring the community aspect of clothes, I think is a really important way to go. I mean, it would look so drastically different to what we're used to right now, but I don't think it's that far away necessarily if we want it to be. And I think we can really look to the models that already exist of small ethical local production.
We've seen in France now they're starting to tax the likes of Shein, but whether that'll make a difference, I suppose only time will tell.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you've brought up the law in France because I think it is an interesting example, but I personally find it quite elitist because, you know, yes, Shein are huge and they are making many, many clothes, but Shein is still a fairly new brand, you know, and also I'm tempted to say, would Shein exist if H&M and Zara hadn't already paved the way for them? Mm-hmm. And I think the French law, you know, is a good starting point, but we really need to make any legislation globally accountable and consistent across the board. And something that I'm working on at the moment, which your listeners would be welcome to look into, is something called the Speak Volumes campaign, which is coming from the organization that I work with in Ghana, the All Foundation. And this is calling for all brands to disclose every single item of clothing that they produce each year. So we're really collecting data because, as I mentioned earlier, the number of clothes that we're producing every year is between 80 and 150 billion. We don't know how many, and we can't legislate without the data. We can't legislate what we can't see. So the Speak Volumes campaign is asking all brands, no matter the size, fast or slow, big or small, to disclose the number of clothes they produce annually. And then from there, once we have that data, we can build globally accountable EPR legislation. Now, bear with me here because I know this is a bit of a technical term, but EPR stands for Extended Producer Responsibility. And what that means is that anytime you buy an item of clothing in a shop, there would be a cost embedded into that item, which would then pay for the entire life cycle of that garment, because currently it's marginalized and frontline communities who are paying for the cost of big fashion's excess. But if we create globally accountable EPR legislation like this, it would mean brands are paying for the recycling and upcycling infrastructure that is currently falling on frontline communities.
And that is something I think we need to see, as you mentioned, all across the world. And Venetia, is there something like we can do better maybe to look after our clothes and prolong them? Because I know you're really good for rewearing and loving and minding the clothes that you already own.
I would say definitely washing less is a really good way to go. If we wash our clothes less, we can prolong their life. And I think something that I do, which people might be a little bit surprised by, is I'll pop my clothes in the freezer, which kind of not only does this remove some of the bacteria that might be there, it also can deodorize them, and it's a really good way of washing them less. And then if something has a stain, I will spot clean it instead of putting it straight in the washing machine. Always read the label as well. Yeah. I think garment labels are there for a reason, so reading the labels is a really good idea. And then also obviously repairing our clothes when they break, befriending your local tailor is a great way to go, learning how to sew. There are so many ways to prolong our clothes, and it's super, super important that we do so. I have started recently volunteering at my local charity shop. I've been volunteering there for the past couple of months. And there is something very humbling about sorting through donated clothes from someone else that really makes you kind of consider and reconsider your own relationship with the clothes that you have. So I know it's not accessible to everyone, but I would really recommend volunteering in your local charity shop if anyone has the opportunity to do so. I have found it incredibly insightful and very, very helpful.
Venetia Lamanna across all social media. We used to work together over 10 years ago. It's been so great to chat to you again and to hear your lovely voice.
I'm super grateful and for amplifying the fashion message. So thank you so much.
Now, after that conversation, I'm going to try an experiment. I have an AirTag and I'm going to sew it into an item of clothing and put it into a recycling clothes bin to see where it ends up. We can track the item in the weeks ahead and see how far our donated goods can travel. That's it for this show and from me, Megan Scully. Thank you to all our guests for joining us today. The show was produced by Trish Laverty and researched by Micheál O'Connell. The programme was funded by Commission Imean and the television licence fee. Next week, we look at Halloween and how we can celebrate the season without haunting the environment. I'll chat to you then. Slán!